Good morning. Welcome to Creating a TechWise Home. My name is Vahid. I'm the IT director at Grace Community Church. I have a bachelor and master in computer science, and I've been part of the Grace Church since 2019. And I'm also part of the Grace Life Fellowship Group. My team and I are pleased to be here to discuss a topic that affects every home nowadays. With over 20 years of professional experience in technology world, I have witnessed how technology has influenced our lives, especially the lives of children. That's why we have come with a heart to support the family by offering guidance to navigate the technology world wisely. This session that we have designed goes beyond a screen time limit or parental control. It's about creating a habit and establishing a habit and boundary to protect our kids and creating a healthy relationship and honor the value we hold as a Christian. We will talk about the hidden risk, share the tools that helps you to protect your family, and also help you think more carefully about how your family uses the technology. This session is designed to be practical and respectful of every family situation. God has gifted Grace Church with a team of the talented professional IT professional, and one of them is Christian Mena. He's our junior developer. I'm going to ask him to come up here to continue the session. But before we start, let's have a word of prayer. Let's pray. Father God, thank you for the great opportunity that you have given us, me and my team, to be here. We are grateful for the chance to gather to discuss a topic that has affected all the families. Father God, we all know how much our pastor loved children, how much he cared about the children. And one of his biggest concerns was how to protect the children against this world. Father God, give us wisdom and guidance through this session. May this session be fruitful and encouraging and ultimately glorifying your name. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
All right. Hello, everybody. It is such a joy to be here with you all this morning. My name is Christian Mena. I currently work in the IT department at Grace Community Church doing web developing. I also serve in children's and student ministries. Those are just some of the ministries I've been a part of. I actually started doing custodial for Grace Academy and then eventually got reeled into the IT team. I am also at the Master University studying computer science, business, and Bible. So these are just some of the topics we're going to talk about today, starting with just where technology is today, the dangers of technology, how we can secure our devices using technology for good, and then how we can maintain those good habits throughout our lives, especially concerning technology. All right, and then since I'm part of children's ministry and work at Grace IT, I'm going to try to combine those two worlds of mine together to hopefully help you guys when you're raising kids in your family. So let's start with technology today. All right, tech is everywhere. This is a fact. If you want to get a job, you need to apply online. Every time you go on a drive, your car is probably connected to some kind of tower and getting some kind of information. You put on GPS, you're being tracked. You want to set up an appointment? Got to do it online. You want to get food from your fridge? Fridge connected to the internet. Want to renew a driver's license? You can now do it online. Trying to buy something? You can use tap, you can use your phone, all these smart devices. Even just a few weeks ago, I had to renew my passport, and the only way to do it is to do it online, which is crazy. And another truth is that technology is rapidly changing. Just in the last few decades, technology has gone from very bulky and with one purpose. You know, phones were just used to communicate and call people. But nowadays, technology is everywhere. It's light, it's easy to carry, and it can do so much. And it's even more powerful than ever before. So technology is also in our pockets, in our wrists, on our ears. Sure that's plugged in. And so much more. And more of the world's population than ever before has access to the internet. So, when did I disconnect? Okay, sure. So a majority of the world's population has access to the internet. That's almost 5 billion people. And these stats are from 2021. So that was almost 5 years ago. So you can imagine today, even more of the world of the world's population has access to the internet. So just for today, these are some definitions just to go over, just to have in mind. So the technology we're going to talk about today are devices that store data, share information, and can communicate. Usually this is through social media, websites, and apps. So this is going to be the kind of technology that we're talking about. We're also going to talk about bad actors. These are people who say and appear to be someone that they're not, especially online. There's lots of online strangers that want to take advantage of whoever they can. And during this presentation, we'll refer to those people as bad actors. Another important thing about technology is tech companies. I'm sure, do any of you guys recognize any of these companies? Maybe, yeah, just a few of them, sure. A lot of these companies are massive, and they have a lot of power. And you can see some of these charts here. These companies own a lot of each other. You know, Google owns YouTube and Android and all the Gmails and Google Docs, and that's all under Google. And same thing with Amazon. They own Ring and Whole Foods, which is just, it's just crazy. Same with Meta and Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. They own all those different companies are all very tied up with each other, and they're very powerful. So just for you to think about how much power and influence they have, this is 56 cents. This is $56. Here's $56,000. Anybody want $56,000? That'd be nice. Yeah, I'll take some. $56 million. Wow, that's even better. $560 million. Wow, that's a lot of money. $56 billion, almost unfathomable what you can do with that amount of money. Well, that is 1% of how much revenue these companies brought in 2024. In 2024, these companies brought in $5.6 trillion in revenue. So it's safe to say they have a lot of power and a lot of influence. It's a $5.6 trillion industry. So do you think they want you using their devices? Yes, of course. Especially with children. Technology is getting in the hands of children at a younger and younger age, especially since COVID. This is before and after 2021, just from 2020 to 2021. The amount of children under the age of 11 that have a smartphone went up from 28% to 42%. That's almost double in just a year. You can imagine, that was in 2021. We're in 2025 now. You know, 4 years later, you can imagine how many children have their own smartphone and have access to the internet. So just to recap, today, tech is pretty much a requirement to be part of our society, right? You want to get a job, you want to get food from your fridge, it's probably connected to the internet. More people use the internet than ever before. This is a fact. And the influence of tech is massive. It's everywhere. And it's more powerful than ever before. So that brings us to the dangers of technology. So just a few decades ago, technology was seen as a uniter. People would want to get bigger TVs to share space with their friends, you know, watch a game, play sports. But nowadays, technology is becoming more personal and more of a personal entertainer. Screens are getting smaller. Screens are getting more apps and features, getting more personalized. And a lot of these programs are specifically made for you to create and see whatever you want, whenever you want. And you have that in your pocket at all times. So technology is getting smaller and becoming more of a personal entertainer. Even the world recognizes the dangers of technology. This is just a few established news organizations that talk about that there's a relationship between technology and depression, anxiety, all those kinds of things. And there's even a headline here, excessive social media use has similar effects to the brain as substance abuse. Those same parts of the brain are activated as substance abuse if you have a social media addiction. So technology can be dangerous. So, but of course, we know what the root of the problem is. It's not technology or these big bad companies. It's us. It's in our hearts. We disobeyed God, and technology is just another way for us to continue in our disobedience, right? It gives us a world to kind of be our own gods, to create whatever we want, to see whatever we want, whenever we want, and we love that. And we took a bite of that forbidden fruit, per se, you know, and we continue to, right? So, but it's not all bad. There's a lot of pros to technology. I'm sure a lot of you know. It's amazing being able to get answers to your questions within seconds. Pull out your phone, do a Google search, you can solve a lot of problems. And at the same time, a lot of us in our work use technology, and it helps us be more productive, which is really a blessing. And technology also strengthens relationships. If you have family members that live thousands of miles away, you can now communicate with them in real time, which is amazing. And technology can definitely be a good thing. There's a lot of good uses of technology. But at the same time, we need to recognize that too much of anything is bad. Technology gives us access to harmful information, and worse than that, we carry it around in our pockets all day, having access to harmful information on us at all day, whenever we want. That can be dangerous. Technology can also decrease our productivity. I'm sure you all are familiar with now infinite scrolling, those algorithms that just keep feeding us exactly what we want to see and what we want to hear whenever we want. And it's really good at reading us and giving and feeding us exactly what we want. Technology also hurts our relationships. We can sometimes ignore the people right next to us because we're in our own little world, right? And it can also weaken social skills. This is something that is newer and I'm sure is more prevalent after COVID, but especially with younger kids after COVID, you're seeing a huge spike in children being behind in school. And instead of having to raise their hands to ask their teacher a question, now they're getting used to typing a message. And that can be very dangerous because this is our future, right? These kids are our future generation. And not being able to have those basic social skills and missing out on those crucial learning moments by being behind a screen is a big problem that we're going to have to deal with. So let's go through a quick example. If you guys have an iPhone, you can pull it out and follow along. So the goal of this is just so you get a little familiar with going through phone settings and just to demonstrate how dangerous these phones can be. So open your settings on your iPhones. Yeah, sorry, Android people. They're gonna just doing iPhone today. Most people have iPhones, so. I have an Android personally, so. But it's okay. So once you're in your settings, scroll down, and in that third section, you're gonna see something called screen time. It's that last option. Don't worry, we're not gonna embarrass anybody. Once you're in there, scroll down a little further, you're gonna see a red icon, and it's gonna say content and privacy restrictions. Go into that little submenu. And then you're going to see this toggle. Some of you might have it off. It's off by default. But you can turn it on really quick, and it'll unlock some more settings. And I'll show you some of those settings and what they can do. And once you're in there, there's going to be a little section called App Store Media, Web, and Games. So go into there. I know we're going to getting deep into it, right? They don't make it easy to find these settings. And scroll down a little more, and you'll find web content. And it's set to unrestricted. By default, all our devices that connect to the internet are set to unrestricted internet access. Now, a lot of times we like to think or imagine that maybe these companies have, you know, some good intentions in mind. Maybe these things will be limited. You have to approve something to have access to, you know, the bad side of the internet. But no, it's completely unrestricted by default. And that's how all devices are. Your phones, your tablets, iPads, laptops, computers, anything that connects to the internet is set by default to unrestricted. And the internet is a lot like a mall. A lot of different stores, a lot of different apps, a lot of strangers going around. Remember, almost 5 billion people have access to the internet now. A lot of strangers, and they all want your attention, they all want your money, they all want to influence you, and it's a huge industry. Would you guys let young children walk around a mall alone, especially a mall filled with strangers, with absolutely no responsibility for these strangers? Because a lot of the internet is still anonymous, and a lot of these people have a lot of confidence in that anonymity. So I think it's safe to say that giving a child unrestricted access to the internet can be dangerous. I hope we can all agree with that. So let's talk about some apps in those app categories, those different stores that we should keep in mind that could be harmful to our children. So first, web browsers. This is your portal into the internet through web browsers. This is how you get to different apps, websites, games, movies, content. It all starts at the web browser. This is what gives you access to the internet. And this is where you can find all the different kinds of stores. Another category to watch out for is video streaming. We're going to go into each of these categories a little bit, but video streaming is another harmful category. It's very distracting. Like I said earlier, these algorithms just keep feeding us always what we want to see, and they don't let us go. Another category to watch out for are games, both online and offline. Games can be very addicting, especially for young children. It just messes with your brain, and like we mentioned earlier, addiction to technology activates those same parts of the brain as substance abuse. So it's definitely something to watch out for. And then social media, of course, is very dangerous. It just feeds our pride more and more, right? And a newer one that it's changing every other week, feels like, AI. That's another category that we need to watch out for. So let's start with web browsers. I'm sure you heard of some of these, Google, Safari, Edge, Firefox, and there's so many more. These web browsers are the portal to the internet. This is probably one of the first things you want to lock down as a parent, because this is how you get access to all the internet, the good side and the bad side. All right, so through these web browsers, this is how you get on all those different apps. And it's definitely, a lot of these web browsers do have some controls built in, but this is definitely something you want to make sure you have time limits on and that is generally restricted. The next category, this is probably one of the more dangerous ones, is video streaming. I'm sure you've heard of some of these apps, YouTube, Netflix, Disney+, Twitch, Hulu, Prime Video, and there's so many more. But just to give you guys an idea of how dangerous these apps are and how they kind of can manipulate and trick you, YouTube has very good algorithm, and they love to feed you always what you want to see. And they love to do short, fast, loud, colorful content, right? And it just hooks you, right? It's like, it's really like a drug. And YouTube does have a kids version. You can turn that on. But the problem is that who decides what is on the kid version of that app? The people who post it. They can say that this content is for kids, and then it gets uploaded to the kids side of YouTube. And of course, that's very dangerous because while some of these people have good intentions, a lot of people come with good intentions, even though that's not really what ends up happening. We see that a lot with Disney movies, too. A lot of, like, subtle messaging, right? Subtle messages that they come in these content, in these movies, in these entertainment. YouTube Kids can be very dangerous because these are pretty much total strangers deciding that this content is fit for children. And what's the point of these apps? To get as much people watching for as long as possible so they make it as addicting as possible. So it's very important to lock these down and just to make sure you know what your child's watching and make sure not spending too much time on it, because eventually it just keeps feeding content and you end up on a side of the video streaming that you didn't know you could end up on. Another category are games, Roblox, Minecraft, Brawl Stars, Fortnite. These change like every other month. Well, what's popular? But Pong, anybody? No? Nobody plays Pong? I guess I'm the only one who still plays Pong. That's fine. So, like I said, these change like every other month, and they go in and out of popularity nonstop. And there's a reason that I put offline and online. It's because there's kind of an important distinction there. Offline games are the kind that don't connect to the internet, don't have multiplayer, don't have an online chat. These are the kinds of games that maybe you can gather on TV and play together with your family, like Wii games, Wii Sports. I'm sure you've all maybe played those. So those are like offline games, you know, games you can play on an airplane with no internet. These games are often still addicting, but can be less harmful because of the less social, competitive, and addicting nature of them. Online games are where it gets a lot more dangerous and a lot more complicated. Because you think of games like Roblox, Brawl Stars, Fortnite, these games have online chats. And again, the internet's very anonymous. So these people, there are lots of strangers on here that can chat with your child at any time. And we used to warn our children not to talk with strangers, you know, in real life, you know, go to a park, don't talk with strangers. But now that's even bigger issue online because there's no accountability, right? So it's extremely important to make sure your child knows not to talk with strangers online, especially at a young age. So a lot of these games are beyond just the online social chattingness of them. They're also built to be very addicting and very competitive. And that absolutely will influence your child's mind. They're going to want to be on that game more and more. They have to just get better and better and better. And the bar to get to be the best just keeps raising and raising and raising, right? So it's a never-ending cycle. So it's definitely something that if it's getting to the point of addiction, you want to stop it and cut it out as soon as possible. So online games are more dangerous than offline games, but they're both still same amount of addicting. And it's definitely something to watch out for. The other category is social media. Woo. Social media really does give you that high when you get those likes and those comments and those feel good. You know, it's all about you, right? But beyond that, beyond the posting and the likes, which is an obvious problem because it just feeds our pride more and more, social media has another side to it. There's a lot of these apps have private messaging built in, and a lot of these private messaging have features that have like self-destruct in 24 hours or something. That's really popular in Snapchat and Instagram, and these disappearing messages make, of course, people on the internet feel confident to say things they shouldn't be saying, especially strangers. So social media, there is that side, of course, with posting and likes and stories and, you know, always trying to compare yourself to others. And as we know, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. So we really need to avoid getting those situations where we end up putting our kids in front of things that make them covet and make them compare themselves to others, because that's just going to lower their self-esteem and discourage them. But beyond that, social media has that private messaging side of it that's even more dangerous, in my opinion. because of all the attention that it gives, you know, you can constantly send each other content through that, and that just keeps bringing up more and more addiction. And the anonymity of it, the disappearing messages feature, it just gives people confidence to say and do things that they shouldn't be doing. All right. Then the last category, AI. It's a newer one, changes just about every month with new features and new things and new discoveries. So you've heard of some of these apps? Woo. Anybody use them? Yep. It's the world of AI is definitely a newer one, but it's still a very important one. It's extremely harmful to developing minds because it just lowers that threshold for critical thinking. Oh, you don't have to do your homework. AI will do it for you. You don't have to brainstorm or think of things. AI will figure it all out for you. And this really hurts the development of a child. You know, their creativity, no creativity needed, no imagination needed, no problem-solving skills are going to be developed if they just keep relying on AI. It is super useful, right? I'm sure it helps us be more productive, absolutely. I use it myself. But at the same time, we just can't rely on it too much. Too much of anything is bad, especially for young children. Having them already have a habit of relying on AI is extremely dangerous and will just hurt them in the future when they actually have to make decisions for themselves that maybe AI doesn't have the answer to. Another aspect of AI, which is more of a newer one, is video and image generation. I'm sure you've seen some of these videos and images, and this is definitely a newer thing. Image generation has been around for a few years now, but video generation is just getting better and better, especially in the last few months. So I'm wondering if you guys can tell which one of these are generated by AI and which ones aren't. All right. Does anybody think the monkey one is real? No? Maybe? Yeah? Yeah? Cool. Awesome. Yeah, me too. Well, actually, these are all generated by AI. They're all fake. Somebody, one of those 5 billion people around the world, typed something in their computer, and it spew out this video. And there's audio tied to it, too. So it sounds and looks real, right? Like, you can't. I don't know. They look super real, all of them. You know, except for the monkey. Maybe not the monkey one. But this is extremely dangerous. And this combines with privacy issues, because a lot of times for social media, we can, you know, we don't know how to change all the settings. So maybe we just have our accounts on public. We're like, okay, you know, whatever. What's going to happen? But what ends up happening is that bad actors, these bad people that want to take advantage of you, find these public accounts, get your information, and they're able to copy the looks of the people you post about, the voices of the people, maybe if you post videos, the voices of your kids and your family and loved ones. And they're able to put these in AI programs, process them, and make them say and do whatever they want. And this is a huge problem. There's already been billions of fraud happening through AI impersonation. So be careful about what you post online, especially what's public, because you never know when those bad actors could target you directly. There was a case with a teacher who had some students who weren't very happy with her. So the students were able to find her picture online and get her voice, and they were able to make it look like she said and did things that she didn't do. And she got fired because of that, and her life got ruined. So the internet is an absolutely dangerous place to have personal information on the loose, because people can use that and manipulate that to make it seem like you've done or have been places or say things that you've never said. This even happens with famous people like politicians. It's just, don't trust everything you see on the internet, especially nowadays. It's so hard to tell the difference between what's real and what's fake. And you can totally, with these programs, with any of these 5 billion people in the world, can grab a picture of a famous politician and just paste it on there, and AI will make it look super realistic. All right. So what does this mean for us? Technology is not in itself bad. It's all about how we use it. There are methods and lots of programs that we can use to better take control of technology, to make sure we use it in the right way. And that's the next thing we're going to talk about, is how can we secure our devices and make sure they're used in the right way. So access to the internet starts at your home, right? Anybody here have Wi-Fi at home? Nice. That's good. So your home internet is what makes your devices smart. The internet connects us and our devices with the outside world, and this is your portal to how you get to those other 5 billion people using computers. So Home routers turn your internet into a wireless signal called Wi-Fi. I'm sure you guys maybe have seen some of these. Grace Church Wi-Fi, yeah. So home routers come with a default name, SSID, and a default password. So these are all different SSIDs. These are the names of your internet, right? So by default, they come with a little sticker on them, right? Your router, and it comes with your default username and your default SSID and a default password, right? And a lot of these times, these default SSIDs, the name of your Wi-Fi, can have the model of your router, right? And that can be dangerous, actually, because there are leaked databases and different programs they can use to guess what the password is to your router by just using the model, if it's still in the default settings. So to make sure your home network is secured, it's a good idea to change those default settings. Make sure your router doesn't have that default name just broadcasting out, because people can take advantage of that and use that to get into your router and get into your network. So another cool thing about routers is that many newer routers have integrated safety and security features, which can be accessed through apps. Some of these routers are like some of the Spectrum routers, Asus, Eero, Netgear. Some of these newer routers, you can actually get apps for them, and you can better control them through these apps. So some of the features that these apps can provide are things like internet downtime. Like, for example, we have in my home, we have some devices on a kid's profile, like iPads and tablets, that they're from the time of like 9 p.m. to 7 a.m., no access to the internet, you know, because that's bedtime. And you can set that up through an app and set up those different profiles for different devices. You can even pause specific devices that are on the internet. And these are good features to have, and it's good to have as much control as possible on your internet. And a lot of these are built in and completely free, and we're just not taking advantage of them. So another important thing to know about securing your home network is guest networks. So if you have people over, or maybe a visitor, or maybe someone's coming by to do some work on your house, it's important to have a guest network. They're not totally blocking internet access if you have a guest network. It still gives internet access, and you can easily change the password and maintain it. But the important part about a guest network is that it doesn't give access to other devices, like your TV or smart devices. Here's a little chart that kind of shows the difference between a guest network in yellow and then your private network, which would be in green. So on your private network, all your devices can talk to each other and see each other, and they all still have access to the internet. But on your guest network, all those people you have over, all those unknown devices who maybe you don't completely trust, they just have access to the internet, and they won't be able to see any of your personal devices. And so that's important because, you know, if you have someone over, let's say a plumber, you know, and they would need your Wi-Fi, sure, no problem. You can give them the guest network, and that's totally fine. But if they have access to your private network, anybody with a little bit of computer know-how can totally just, you know, sit outside your house, be on your network, and they can actually unpack all the things going through your internet. So all your emails, any data you're sending through it, and this is a problem with, especially with public networks, which we'll go into a little bit later. But these are some other home networking tips. A lot of the stuff you still send through your network is visible to your internet service provider, so just be aware of that. There's a feature called WPS, which is usually on by default, but it's a good idea to turn this off if you're able to, because this opens the door to remotely be able to configure your internet, and it's just a good idea to have that off. And again, anyone connected to your network through some various programs are able to scan and collect all the data that your router is sending and receiving. So emails, you know, bank info, any kind of messaging or data that you're sending through the internet can be unpacked and intercepted by somebody if they're on that same network as you. So that's why it's important to keep that guest network separate from your private network, right? All right. Now, public networks. So now we're going outside the home. Public networks often have no password, and because of this, they're set up with little to no encryption. So there's even been some cases of people going to public places like airports and coffee shops. And if you see this here, it says free Wi-Fi, but anybody can set that up. You know, so it's not as free as it seems. But so all they're doing is they're just having you connect to the network, and then maybe if you send any sensitive information, it's going straight through them. And they can unpack it, and they can intercept it and unencrypt it. And this is a huge problem, especially you can see some of these headlines that people are actually setting up these fake networks at airports and coffee shops, and they're tricking people to sign into this network and to log in and connect to this network. And then when people send private information, they're just collecting all that information, and they can, of course, use it for bad. So beware of what public networks you connect to and what information you're sending and receiving through those public networks. Now, we do, if you don't want to connect to a public network, you do, of course, have your cellular and data, which is often can be a little more spotty connection-wise and have data limits, and using more data can be more expensive. But these are more secure than public networks and is another option, just if you're in a pinch and need to make sure you have some kind of internet connection. So what does this mean for us overall? This basically, just beware of what networks you access and who has access to your network, right? Especially at home. And a lot of home routers, depending on the model, and newer ones especially, are able to have internet downtime set up and more security features enabled for certain devices on your network. And you should use that to your advantage to make sure you're controlling your home and the people that you care about most, right? So the next thing that we need to secure are apps and knowing what apps our children have access to. And this all starts with app stores. So when you install an app, you usually need to put in a password. It's generally a good idea to not share your app store password with young children. All right. This just opens a door to them be able to install whatever they want, because even free apps are sometimes the most dangerous. All right. This is beyond them just spending, you know, a lot of money on a silly game. This is, we want to limit them from having access to even free apps that could be harmful, right? So a lot of these app stores have settings to turn on to ensure that ask for a password, even when installing free apps. You want to just make sure you have that on, especially if a child gets access to that device. And some phones also allow for fingerprint or face scan, so just be aware of that. If your child has their fingerprint saved on your phone, you know, you don't want them making purchases or downloading things they're not supposed to be downloading. So here's some quick and easy tips on how to find apps on your phone and know what's installed. On iPhone, it's just going to be in your settings. You're going to scroll down, and near the bottom, you'll find a little apps section, and that's where you can find just a list of apps. You can see what's installed on your device, because children are very clever. So they'll drag an app, they'll put it on their page in a folder in a different page. You know, it's really hard to find, you know, manually digging through all those different app pages. But right here in your settings, you can find just a list of apps in a very easy and compact way. Very similar on Android. Just in your settings, you're going to find an app section, and then there you're going to see a list of apps. And that's just an easy way to just get an overview of what's on your device. Very similarly on Mac, there's going to be in your Finder app a little section called Applications, and that's where you can see everything installed. Windows, again, in the settings, apps, you're going to find a little section with all the different apps that are installed. And it's important to know what apps your child has access to, because having access to the wrong apps can expose your child to harmful content, bad influences, and addicting habits. Right, so we want to know the apps they're using and if those apps are installed and make sure we have controls on those apps. But at the same time that there are these dangerous apps you need to watch out for, there are also good apps that we can use. They can protect from harmful content and they can prevent phone addiction. So here are some apps that actually come included by default and are completely free on your phone you can utilize to better control your device and your child's usage on that device. So on the Android side of things, there's something called Google Family Link, which can be accessed through the settings. And it's really cool because it's just kind of an all-in-one. It has time limits, location tracking, web filtering, all inside one app. And this is on the Android side. You can also download it on iPhone as well. And this is just something to make sure your child stays safe online and doesn't end up on the wrong side of the internet. And these often just take minutes to set up. On the iPhone side, we were there a little earlier today, but in that screen time, you're going to find a lot of different options. It's kind of hard to get to, right? It's kind of like hidden in there, but it just takes a little bit of time, and you can find these settings and turn them on, and it could save you from a lot of regret in the future. Just having those screen time limits and those web filtering can protect from harmful content. Like we said earlier, in that content and privacy restriction, that's just a great place to make sure those are set up. On the Windows side, you can actually create a Microsoft account for your child and add it to your Microsoft family. And then with that child Microsoft account, when you can add another user to your Windows laptop and you sign in with your child's account, And then that'll give you access to activity reporting, content filtering, and screen time on Windows devices. So that's something to set up as well. And there should be a little QR code on your paper, and that'll have videos and tutorials on how to set these up. On Mac, it's very similar to iPhone. In your settings, you're going to find a section called Screen Time. And then from there, you can set up content restrictions and screen time settings and just overall have better control of your devices. It is important to note that a lot of these web filtering things aren't perfect. So that doesn't mean you just put on, okay, total, you know, no bad websites. Here you go, kid. You know, because a lot of them aren't perfect. And a lot of times these people, they try to slip through those restrictions, the people who create these bad websites. So you have to be an active parent, actively monitoring to make sure your child doesn't end up on the wrong side of the internet, even if you have these features on. Some other good apps to use. These are third-party apps, so not all of them are free, but there are apps like Bark, NetNanny, and Custodial. And these apps are more specifically targeted towards parents and can have more features that maybe parents are looking for. Bark is a cool one. It's able to scan emails, social media messages, and it sends reports automatically to parents about what's going on in your child's device. It is paid, and it can range from about $50 to $100 a year, but it is another option if you want more control on your child's device. Custodio is another option. It gives a lot of free features like web filtering, but at the same time, if you want those premium features like scanning emails or scanning social media messages, you are going to pay for that premium plan. Another super important category of good apps that we can use to better take control and secure our families are location tracking apps. So Apple phones have Find My built-in, which is extremely useful. A lot of us probably use it with their own families. And you know, just being able to keep tabs on where your loved ones are is a really cool benefit of technology, especially nowadays. But there are also popular free apps like Life 360, that can be used on Android as well. And these are specifically made to better keep track of your family. So they give real-time data on location, battery life, speed, and location history. And a lot of these features are completely free, which is awesome. And there are some paid subscription features, like more driving data, more location history, and whatnot. But overall, these apps just give a peace of mind of knowing where your loved ones are, you know, and it also gives other features like battery life, which is just cool to have, especially for those loved ones. Another category of apps are apps that are more targeted on web filtering. There are apps like Covenant Eyes, maybe some of you have heard of it, but it's mainly focused on web filtering and accountability. A lot of small groups and different kinds of groups use them, but they're meant to take control of bad habits and to block inappropriate web content, and they also alert those who are set up to keep you accountable if you do end up on the wrong side of the internet. These are really cool apps to take advantage of. And so see, not all the internet's bad. A lot of it can be helpful. So just an overview on these different apps. You do not have to spend money. Like I said, inside the built-in Apple settings or Google Family Link, you can find web filtering and time limits and all that good, good reporting that can be used completely for free and are built into your phones. It just takes a few minutes to set up. And there's also other apps like Life 360 and Custodial, which are also mostly free and just take a few minutes to set up and can really help you better control your devices. And then, of course, there are the paid side of apps like Bark, which if you want total and complete parental control, you can take advantage of. And a lot of these apps are better at different things. So you think about Custodial and Bark. Those are made for parents, for those reporting, for monitoring children, for just basically being a parent. And at the same time, there are apps that are focused on content filtering, like Covenant Eyes. And then Life 360 is, of course, focused on location monitoring. So if you really want to know where your child is, get Life 360. And then if you want an all-in-one, that's where you can find those in the built-in settings. Those have everything from app limits to location tracking to different kinds of web filtering features. So how can we use tech for good? Now, there is a lot of ways to use tech, as we can see. There's a lot of bad, but there's also some good things, right? But it's really important to make sure that our family knows how to use tech for good. So the original purpose of phones was to contact people, and that's something they still can be used for. Phones can be used to contact parents or emergency services at any time. This is a good lesson for kids to know how to use a phone. Make sure your child knows how to contact key trustworthy people on their phone. Make sure they know your phone number, your address. You know, these are great skills and something that technology that we can use technology for good to better keep track of our loved ones. Teach your child how to use these features and to be critical and not trust everything. Remember how we used to say, don't trust strangers? You know, don't trust strangers on the internet. So it's really important to just make sure your child knows and understands that technology is used for their good and can be used for their good to keep them safe and to keep parents in the know, and that's a good thing. Make sure your child knows about avoiding strangers, giving out personal information, and to overall just to be critical about everything they see and hear, especially on the internet. Technology can also be used to teach responsibility. You know, you give a child a watch or a smartphone, it's a good way just to make sure they charge it every night, take care of it. These devices are usually fragile. So making sure that your child knows that it's a privilege, the device that they have, and that they need to take care of it is an important part of technology. So another really important part about pretty much everything, and you know, especially concerning children, is their maturity and age. For younger children, it's really important to have tighter control, and especially over what they have access to on the internet, because they always end up on the wrong side of the internet. So, and as they get older, though, it's really important to introduce them to technology and the internet and to show that you trust them. And as a parent, you can do this at your own pace. It all depends on the maturity of your child. And it takes a lot of wisdom. It's really hard. But it's important that you don't totally shelter them, because then they're just going to be at a huge disadvantage. And they're going to end up hating you when they're older. So there's some other good apps we can use, like I'm sure maybe some of you have heard of Logos Bible Study, or Literal Word, PureFlix, or Ground News. Logos Bible Study is really cool because you can download different translations and different versions of the Bible and compare them. It's a good thing to help maybe enhance your Bible studying. Literal Word is another cool app. You can click on certain words in the Bible, and it'll show you other passages where that same word is said. It's a cool way just to compare different passages and, again, enhance your Bible study. PureFlix is a version of, it's a play on the word Netflix, but it's mostly has Christian content, like VeggieTales and those kind of stuff, mainly targeted towards kids, and it's just a better alternative than your kid roaming around Netflix. Rather than have PureFlix. Not everything is good on it, it's not perfect, but it's better than the alternatives. Ground News is another option. This is a secular app, nothing to do with Christianity, but it definitely focuses on not sensationalizing the news and just giving you, you know, what you need to know. And, you know, from all different perspectives and not in a biased way. So these are some good apps that you can use to make sure your time on the internet is purposeful. And then finally, how do we keep these good habits? This is probably one of the harder parts because we always feel super encouraged to get on these things, but then we don't ever get to them, right? So some habits to encourage are to pause it, set time limits, especially for yourself, even for yourself, especially for your loved ones and those kids who don't know any better. Just make sure you have those in place, and they take, again, minutes to set up and can save you hours of time. Another good habit to have is just to put it aside. Should your device be the first thing you reach for in the morning? It often is. So it's just important that maybe we can do something physical. We can physically separate ourselves from our devices to stop that addiction and that reliance on them. Maybe charging it in a different room, charging it, you know, somewhere else can help us have just a physical barrier between us and our devices, and that could be healthy. Another habit to really just instill in yourself is just to be present. You know, life is short. Don't spend the opportunities of, you know, the day behind a screen, especially when you're at an awesome place like this, right? There's so many amazing people around us, so much wisdom that we can just absorb everywhere, and so many people we can help too. But if we waste it behind a screen, you know, it's something you're going to end up regretting. Another really important thing to just make sure you walk away with is just to use these good apps. Many web filtering, time limits, and all those reporting are all built in, and they're completely free. They often take just minutes to set up and can save hours of wasted time and a lot of regret. So it's going to take time and a lot of learning, especially since this stuff is rapidly changing, right? Like every month it's different. But it's going to take a lot of effort and learning, but using these features for good is definitely worth it, especially if you're raising young kids, right? Another amazing resource, as you guys can see, are the people around you. I know some families at church, their spouses have each other's time limit passcode. It's just a great way to just make sure you're on the same page, to keep each other accountable, and it's a great way to just make sure that you are being held accountable, even by your own spouse. Have alternatives ready when there's downtime. This is very important. because when we get bored, it's really easy just to reach for our phones. It's so easy, and it gives us always what we want to see when we want to see it, and it really hooks you. So having alternatives like games, sports, events, Bible studies, maybe going on a hike, there's so many great things we can do with our lives, and just making sure that when we do have that downtime, that we do have alternatives ready so that our kids aren't reaching for those devices so quickly. Another amazing resources are the people around us right here. Other families have kind of, well, especially some of them that are more mature and have older kids, you can ask them how they address technology, how they deal with downtime, and how they raise their kids. You can get a lot of wisdom from them. You can decide what you want to implement and what you don't implement, but asking questions. People are never reluctant to help you out, especially with giving advice. And you can choose what advice to take and implement, right? So these are some other cool tools you can utilize, your cell provider. I know some providers like Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, they have parenting controls built in, so you can track data usage and cell phone usage and location through your cell provider, and that's usually included with your plan. Your router, as mentioned before, some of these routers have apps and features. You can set downtime and pause internet activity and also set web filtering straight through your router. AirTags and trackers are a cool newer technology. You can just put one in your kid's backpack, and you can know their location. Some people, I've seen some parents even put in their kid's shoes. you can use this technology, you know, for your benefit and to keep your family safe and to keep that peace of mind, right? And it's something we can take advantage of. There's nothing wrong with taking advantage of technology when using it for good. Smartwatches are another cool technology, and nowadays, smartwatches even can get some with LTE, so they connect directly to cell towers, so that your child doesn't even need a phone. You can just have a smartwatch. If you need to coordinate pickup or drop-off, they can call and text straight through their watch, no phone needed. It's a great alternative to having like a phone with a big screen and access to the internet and all those different things come with a phone. A watch can be a lot more distracting and can maybe be a good balance between introducing your child to tech and be able to communicate with them, but not giving them a full-on phone, you know, just yet. Another amazing tool is just to keep them busy. It's so important. Go on hikes, do Bible studies, have play days. Let them have fun. Let them do different things that isn't their phone. I know a lot of times that it's really easy to have that kind of reward system with technology. You know, hey, if you finish your food, you can use your iPad. You can use your technology. But that really just lifts technology up on a pedestal, right? It's the goal. Our reward is technology. That's what we want. But that's not the kind of thing we want to tell our children. Instead, it would be a better alternative to instead instill maybe more helpful things like, hey, if you all do all your chores, we'll do a board game night. You know, as an alternative to, you know, if you do all your chores, you get your iPad for an hour. Like, okay. It's not the best thing, but sure. Instead, you know, set up board game night, hiking, maybe you go to a sports game. There's all kinds of different things. Maybe giving your kid a Lego set. You know, all these more physical, grounded things are way better alternatives, especially as a reward system. You don't want your child to think reward, technology. That's not a good place to have technology, especially that high up on a thing where that's always the goal they're looking for. All right, fine. I'll do this good thing because then I get to play on my iPad. That's not at all the kind of motivation you want your child. So here's some other ideas for phones, maybe, if you're thinking about getting your child a device. Flip phones are great. Call and text. Your child might get bullied, but that's okay. It's a sacrifice we're willing to make. It's fine. there are actually phones designed specifically to not be addicting, like the Light phone. And these are black and white screens, you know, very basic. You can do maps, texting, and calling. You know, that's all you really need anyways, especially for young children. Refurbished phones are another option. They're cheaper, and, you know, it's a good way to teach your child to be responsible with their phones, but they are going to take a lot of setup on your side to go through those settings, set up those parental controls, set up those filtering, those screen time things, because you don't want your child to just have open access. Remember, like, by default, it's set to unrestricted. Don't give your child, you know, a weapon. Phones can be very dangerous. Another option is the Bark phone. This is, of course, more expensive. But, you know, if you want total control, if you really do not trust your child, you could give them one of these, and, you know, you'll be able to control and have that reporting and all those features that you would want. Again, some good resources, the Bible, of course, other families around us, leaders at church, Bible study shepherds, and elders, they're always available. All you have to do is reach out. Books on parenting, especially from a biblical viewpoint. We have an amazing bookstore here on campus as well. Sermons on the family and children, these are abundant. And that's why technology can be so good, because we can find these online in like seconds. And that's amazing. There's also a lot of websites with Christian views on parenting. And these can sometimes be better because, like I said, technology is rapidly changing. So, you know, this presentation will probably be outdated in a year, you know. So just making sure you're keeping up and staying ahead of your children, because children are very clever and they will be able to get around anything you put in front of them. So making sure that you spend that time and effort to make sure you're one step ahead and maintain that control is definitely something that will take time and effort, but is worth it. So just to recap, technology is a part of our lives, whether we like it or not. Technology left unsupervised can be very dangerous. Don't let your kid roam around a mall alone. Securing devices is crucial, especially today where people are always trying to take advantage of us, right? And there are lots of tools that we can use to help us better control our devices, and a lot of these tools are completely free and just take a little bit of time and effort to set up. And sometimes learning and going through that setup can be hard, but once you get past that and it's all set up, you know, it's very worth it. And using tech wisely starts with implementing good habits. So make sure you yourself have those good habits in place. And then kids love to observe their parents and they love to copy their parents. So if you have those good habits in place, it's going to be a lot easier to influence your kids to also have those good habits. Just some final encouragements. In 1 Corinthians 13:1, Paul says, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal." Don't be noisy gongs. Don't be clanging cymbals. Love your children. Show them that you love them. Spend some time with them. Learn about what they like. And maybe that could change your mind. Maybe you could play games with them. Maybe you could figure out what they're doing and just come at them not with a negative interaction. If every time you interact with your child is a negative thing, they're just not going to tell you things, right? So don't be a clanging cymbal. Don't be an easy gong. Be a loving parent. Finally, fathers and mothers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And that's all we're trying to do, right? Raise them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, because that's the ultimate thing that we want for our families, right? For them to be saved, for them to have eternity with their Savior and God. And that can sometimes be forgotten, especially in our families when emotions are high and stress is high as well. We're just trying to get things done. But we always have to keep that motivation, our priorities in mind. God is our first priority, right? Not ourselves. And that's the reason we're doing everything we do, right? It's to honor the Lord. And then here's another link to those resources that you might have on your handouts. All right. And then now I'm going to ask Vahid to come up, and we're going to do a little Q&A. I don't know if we have a mic runner, but if you guys have any questions, maybe you jot it down. We'd be happy to answer some of them. Sure. Yeah, just go ahead and raise your hand, and then someone will bring a mic over to you.
Let's see. Thank you. My smart TV is connected to my private network. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue? Should I connect it to my public network, Wi-Fi?
Yeah, no. For those personal devices like TVs, it's definitely good you have it on your private network. Because if you have it on your guest network or your public network, then anybody who comes to your house can control that device. So having it on your private network is definitely a good idea. Yeah, and you can also control it through your network, and it's a lot better. Yeah, definitely those more personal devices, speakers, TVs, phones, lights, cameras, have it on your private network, because you just don't want anybody to have access to them, right? Yeah, totally good question. Any other questions? Wow. Was it? Well, I hope I didn't talk that much.
I was really curious. I like the router stuff that you were talking about, and like the smart routers that exist now where you can like connect to a phone and stuff.
Yeah.
Can you, if you're aware of them, like share a little bit more about what features come with that? Like if you were to get a newer one compared to like an old one that you just stuck with?
Yeah, totally. It depends which kind of router you have, because Netgear has some older routers that don't have those features, but there are newer ones from Netgear, Eero, and Spectrum that you can control where you do get access to those features. And so here's an example of some of those features. There's different profiles you can make. So you can create a profile for your children's devices. You can call it kids' devices. And then you'll have a list of all the devices that ever connect to your network. You can just put each of those devices inside that profile. And you can set settings on that profile for downtime, for tracking. So you can see, you know, if they're on for 2 hours of the internet a day, then it'll stop internet access. You know, that's a good way to just maintain that control. And you can also set those schedules, like I mentioned earlier, you know, from a certain time to a certain time, no internet access for the devices inside this profile. And there's also other features that you can go through your router, like some routers offer to show what websites are accessed through the router. And it just depends on the router model, yeah. A lot of the newer ones have those features through an app, which is really clean and easy to use. But some older ones, it gets a little harder to set those up. Yeah. Yeah, good question. A lot of the newer routers that your internet provider gives you has those features. So it's all about just seeing and turning them on and setting them up. Yep. Any other questions? Yeah.
So you said not to access, or like if I wanted to access my bank account and I'm in an airport, mm-hmm. should I not use the free Wi-Fi? Should I try to use data? And what is the most secure way to access sensitive information when you're out and about?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Data is a great option for sure. Using a hotspot, that's another good thing you can turn on for sure that will give you more secure internet access. As for most airport Wi-Fis have some kind of encryption set up. It depends if you see that little padlock. You have to put in a password. That usually means it's encrypted and it's safe to transfer data through. But if it has no padlock and you click on it and you instantly have internet access, I would avoid sending that kind of information through it. Especially at like coffee shops and places like that. Because there are people that set up fake networks with no padlock. And using those networks can compromise your data. But yeah, so definitely try to use your cellular data or a hotspot to securely transfer sensitive information. But if you don't have that option, then it would be worth to find a more secure network. Yeah, try avoid the open networks for sure. Yeah.
I just want to add to that. We decided to have this session a little bit short to have a Q&A. Also, I have IT team here. If you don't mind to stand up. Alan, Ethan, and Hannah, Abby, and Brandon is there. We have all the IT team here just after this session. If you have any question, you want them to walk through with you on the phone, your devices, to show you anything, they are here available at the end of the session.
Yeah, they're all very knowledgeable on technology and devices, so if you see any of them, pull them aside and ask them a quick question. I'm sure they'd be happy to answer. Cool. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Should I be eating those cookies?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We love cookies. So what cookies are pretty much just trackers. They're online trackers so that other websites can share information with other websites. So, you know, if you go to Amazon and then you go to Google or go to Best Buy knows that you were on Amazon before, and they all just share information with each other. So it's generally best to block cookies just because you don't want that private information just being shared all around. And then they just keep feeding you ads and advertisements and taking advantage of you. But a lot of websites now require you to accept cookies to even use the website. So just be careful about what information you put online. Cookies can be dangerous, but if you're going to reputable websites like Amazon and Google and Best Buy, you'll be generally okay. But if you end up like on the wrong side of the internet trying to like pirate movies or, you know, and on websites that aren't as good, that aren't as trustworthy, then it could be dangerous, the kinds of cookies they share. Because sometimes these cookies include our addresses, our phone numbers, and those kind of things. So generally try to block cookies. And usually through your web browser, you can clear your cookies or clear your cache. And that's a good thing to do every few months just to keep your browser running quick and not sharing all that information with all of the websites, right? But yes, most websites do require you to accept cookies, which is very lame. But it's a part of our technology world, and it is what it is.
I had a quick question kind of about when on like free Wi-Fi with like the background of apps running, mm-hmm. would that still be something that they could access if I don't necessarily go into that app or like do something on my end in it? But like if I have like the whatever the background app mm-hmm. refresh stuff, is mm-hmm. that still something that could be accessed?
Yeah, totally. That's a good question. So yeah, a lot of times those background apps are just running stuff locally. So, you know, just like waiting for notifications or whatever. But sometimes those background apps are sending and receiving notifications through the internet nonstop. And yeah, through free Wi-Fi networks, anybody, if somebody is scanning that network and intercepting those packets, they'd be able to read that information. So definitely something to watch out for. Yeah, absolutely. Background apps are constantly sending and receiving information through the internet. And those can be intercepted on free networks. And even on your home network, if a bad actor has access to your home network and has a program that's scanning for what's going through the network, they'll be able to read what's going through. So just be careful about what network you're on. If so much as like one bad person is trying to scan that network, it could be dangerous. But a lot of these apps like banks and emails, they do encrypt. So most of them do encrypt. So a lot of the information, even if someone is scanning the internet you're on, they're not going to be able to intercept it and just read it in plain text. It's encrypted. But there are tools that people use to de-encrypt this information. So sometimes better just to be safe than sorry, right? We don't want to put any of that information out there just easy to grab. Yeah, hopefully that helps.
For social media, you were saying AI can replicate your identity to some extent. Mm-hmm. Should we be all setting our social media to private mode or just like delete every single picture that we ever have out there?
Yeah, private mode is definitely, I think, a wiser way to go. You know, a lot of us connect with family members through social media and friends, and that's totally fine. But having it on public is definitely dangerous because then anybody who looks you up has access to all these images and videos, and they know where you are, where you've been, maybe where you're going to go. And, you know, just having that public is not a wise idea, especially if there are people who aren't looking out for you and don't want the best for you. They could, you know, take those images and videos and manipulate them with AI easily, very easily. And, you know, create something, make it seem like you're somewhere you're not or that you said something that you didn't say. So definitely, if you have your accounts on public, switch them to private. You might, especially nowadays, it's just safer. Yep. Cool. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a lot of these, like we said, it's a $5.6 trillion industry for a reason, right? They just love to collect as much money as possible. And through that, they've become very predatory in the way they price things. So there's no more one-time purchases for things. There's a lot of subscriptions. And sometimes if you really need that program, you have to, you know, bow down to them because that's just how much power they have. You know, you're going to have to buy that subscription and pay for it.
We have a question back here about how to discern which video games are maybe better for mm-hmm. your kids, or are there any tools for that?
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of websites that help you decipher that. And a lot of these games usually have ratings too about, you know, what kind of age they're suitable for. But the best tool is definitely you as the parent, because you know your child, right? So you know what your child can tolerate. You know what might influence them. If you're going to have a 5-year-old playing, you know, a violent game, not a good idea. But, you know, if they're, you know, in their teenage years, you know, it's all right for them to play a violent game with some friends. You know, I don't know. it gets a little more tolerable as they get older, right? You know. But, yeah, generally, overall, I think it's just really important for you to just sit with them for a little bit, see what they're playing, who they're interacting with, maybe ask who they're playing with, who they're messaging, what they're messaging. You know, you don't have to be super legalist about it, you know, because a lot of times, this ends up causing our children to be like ostracized and making them, you know, hate their parents. But you want to show them you love them and care about them and try to understand them at least a little bit. But yeah, it's a hard balance, but it depends on the child. It just depends on the child. Yeah.
It's speaking of video games, that is a way I think a lot of kids connect with one another. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, you know, very a big fan of that, but at the same time, like you said, you don't want to be legalistic or ostracize, you know, your kids from other kids, because we live in such a tech-heavy world now. Our children are being raised in that. So what is your recommendation? And you might have already covered this. I came in late, but how much time should a teenager be spending on, say, video games, things like that? Do you think every day a certain amount, or you know, weekends? What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, that's definitely going to depend on the child and the family. It's very difficult to give like an exact number for that. But and also games are there's a lot of different categories of games, and it depends. Some games are, you know, considered, you know, more violent than other games, or less violent than other games. And a lot of people consider some games violent that other people don't consider violent, you know. But overall, like having a certain time for gaming and internet access can work. It can totally work to have like time limits, maybe half an hour a day. You know, it depends. But you really don't want to have your kid in the habit of just maximizing that time every day. Because that can be dangerous if they're just always looking forward to that time. You know, having that technology is, you know, as a good thing. You know, I want to use my iPad for the full hour every day. That can get dangerous for sure. But yeah, it definitely depends on the child. It's really hard to say. It depends on the child and the situation. And there's a lot of tools you can use online to help better understand that, especially depending on the age of the child. When they're younger, you definitely want to limit it. But as they get older, you know, a lot of times to do school assignments, you need to use technology, especially nowadays. So just having that balance and be able to understand that, you know, as they get older, they're going to have to be exposed to technology. They're going to have to know how to use technology, and they're going to need time with technology for work, for school assignments, and to connect with friends. It's just, it's a hard balance for sure, but it depends on the child. That's all I can say, yeah.
I have a question. Well, first, thank you both for taking your time preparing and helping us to be more tech-savvy and helping our family. I am not a very tech-savvy person. I would like to learn more. What would you recommend in terms of what books or websites or a blog that I can go and learn on my own? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. Everything we know about technology is learned, right? So we're all learning at the same time, and it's very complicated because it always changes so fast. But there are a lot of great resources online to find different things that can help you learn about new technologies. Even in the QR code I send, there's some videos there that show you how to get through those settings and find what you're looking for. I would say that finding those videos, searching for things you're looking for, you can often find resources online, especially from a Christian perspective. Always a great angle to go from. But if you're looking for more like practical things, like where do I find this setting, where do I find that setting, it's definitely worth just Googling, especially find on videos online that help walk you through how to set those things up. I attached some of those videos in the QR code in those resources to help you set those up and find those things. And oftentimes, as you're going through those settings, you'll find another setting that could be interesting. So just spending some time in it and looking around and being curious with those settings. That's why we did that little interactive part at the beginning where you go through your iPhone settings and look for those web filtering settings, just so that you get a little more comfortable with going through those settings. It shouldn't be something we're afraid of. It's okay to dig through settings and see what's offered, because these are always changing. But yeah, spend some time in settings. The internet's a great resource, and there's a lot of walkthroughs and videos that can help out with that. Yeah.
Chris, thank you for your presentation. I have a question for Vahid. What is your preferred internet browser and why?
Good question. As a developer, I always love Chrome because it's more secure, and also it has more features for me to navigate about what I've developed and what I'm going to see. But mainly all the browsers are safe. I haven't tried a lot Edge. I'm not sure if anybody has experience about working with Edge, but Firefox and Chrome are the most safest browser I can recommend.
Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of these browsers are actually built off of Chromium. So if you use Firefox, if you use Edge, if you use Chrome, they all actually use Chrome under them. they're all running Chrome. So yeah, a lot of browsers end up being very similar. It just depends on what you prefer.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Christian. I had more of a comment, but maybe you could talk on it. Sure. I have one of the apps that I was kind of answered the lady's question about video games. There's a website, actually it's an app on my phone called Common Sense Media. Mm-hmm. And I use it for checking out movies before we go to the theater and waste money on stuff. And they have really good reviews of it. Not just age, but also why the rank. Like, they have like 5 stars for like 10 different categories. And I believe you can find video game reviews on there as well. And it's a very, I don't know if it's a Christian organization, but it definitely hits the marks for us as far as the kinds of things we're looking for. Awesome. So Common Sense Media is a good app I use. I don't know if there's other ones that you might be aware of.
Awesome.
I just want to point that out.
That's great. Yeah, and again, this is one of our greatest resources, the people around us, right? They have so much knowledge and wisdom, and a lot of people have gone through these struggles before we have. So it's worth definitely asking people around us, and that's a great option. There's a lot of websites like Common Sense Media that have these different tiers and rankings, so you can figure out what kind of apps are better suited for your children, your family. Yeah, thank you. Awesome. Any other questions? Oh, wow. Went fast. Yeah.
How do you prevent yourself from getting phished on the internet?
That's a great question. So I'm sure you've all had those pop-ups come up maybe on your browsers when you're browsing. Like, your computer is compromised, and then you try to click X and ends up installing something, right? So it's definitely, it can be tricky. Some good habits to just have is to always check who's sending the message, what the message. If there's a lot of urgency in the message, like, hurry up and click this link, time's running out, then that's a good sign that it's not real and it's fraudulent. Another thing to look out for, especially with like getting phished and stuff like that, especially nowadays with AI, before you'd be able to tell because of like typos and that kind of stuff, but now people can have like perfect English thanks to AI. But it's really tricky, but just be aware of who's sending the message, different tip-offs, like if it's super urgent or if they really want you to click a link or download something. Those are all
just don't click on all links. Whatever you receive, just don't click on them. Just see who is the sender.
Yeah, don't click on anything. Or just click everything, and then then you'll find out what's real and what's not. Yeah, yeah, that's hard. It's always changing, and it's really hard to stay safe online nowadays with so many people. Again, 5 billion people, and all of them want to take advantage of you. You know, it's hard.
Also, we have a feature that you can install additional to your computer, like some tools, like a Bitdefender. Maybe Alan can comment on, you know. So yeah, it's a Bitdefender that it can help you as an endpoint security to your computer. That basically track all the email that you receive on some sort of the download that can track for you to make sure it's not phishing. You can consider Bitdefender as well.
Yeah. Programs like Bitdefender, they usually have a little pop-up that comes up that says, like, this link is probably not safe. So it scans the page and checks. So those are other options, like Bitdefender, Norton. I think McAfee too. Those are different options for like preventing like phishing and malicious stuff. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely like checking what the link says. If it doesn't say Microsoft.com, and it's apparently from Microsoft, like there's something fishy here. Yeah, but a lot of times they do also use special characters and things that could be tricky. But yeah, definitely watch out. Be careful what links you click on. And even QR codes, too. I've seen they put, like, fake parking QR codes, like, on poles and stuff. Like, hey, pay for parking, scan this QR code, and it's malware. When you scan the QR code, it installs malware. So just be aware of what you scan. Don't trust everything, especially concerning the internet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would you say the balance is between raising a functioning member of technology society, but also giving them a phone too early? Because you don't want to give a 5-year-old, even if it's just call and text, I don't think a 5-year-old needs a phone.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. I think that we definitely want Christians in technology, right? A lot of these technology companies are filled with Christians nowadays, and that's why we get some of these good features and some of these good uses. But especially when kids are younger, you don't want them to have technology per se, but you definitely want to introduce them to technology, and I think that all comes with age. As they age and get older, and of course it's maturity, which only you, the parent, can tell. Because some kids, some 12-year-olds are more mature than some 18-year-olds, you know. So it all depends on the kid. But overall, just make sure you introduce them to technology. Technology shouldn't be this taboo or scary thing, but also shouldn't be this super awesome, perfect thing. You know, somewhere in the middle of just technology as a tool. That's how we should view technology, as a tool. And it's not something we should rely on completely because it's a tool that can be flawed. But yeah, that's a good question. Overall, making sure you introduce your child to technology, because we need good Christians in the tech field, like our IT team. You know, it's we're able to serve the church and help the church grow, especially in this technology age. A big part of the church's influence comes through the internet, and we need Christians that know how to use that, right? Yeah, just make sure you introduce the technology. It all comes with age, I think. When they're younger, definitely limit technology as much as you can, because it's so easy to be addicting. Yeah.
What do you think about VPNs, and do you have a specific VPN recommendation? I know Nord is really big with YouTube sponsorships.
Yeah, a lot of these VPNs are popular. Oh, do you know? What more about VPNs?
VPN? You wanna? Alan is our network admin at Grace Community Church. That's why he knows a lot
more,
about the
more VPNs. Technical stuff about it.
Right.
But
I'll give you a mic.
So I haven't personally used too many VPNs, but I know that they get your internet traffic and they put it on one of their computers and then make it seem like it's coming out of one of their computers. But I'm sure Alan can speak a little more on it.
So VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. And definitely, I would show a lot of wisdom to that, especially if your children are installing those things, because you won't know what type of traffic is being pushed. So NordVPN, I mean, yeah, all the VPNs are pretty similar. But depending on why you're using it, I guess that would be like, sorry, but my question on, are you just doing it for private browsing, or is it?
Any public network.
Okay.
Outside of the home, basically.
Yeah. So that's okay. I see where you're coming from now. So yeah, I would definitely encourage that. And again, depending on the maturity of who's using it, right? Is it? I don't want my data to be, you know, I don't want people to be sniffing what. Private data, my financial data, or any type of data that you just kind of want more secure. But I, you know, children right now have access to that, and they can enable that also by default on their smartphones or tablets too. So,
yeah, that's cool. Also, I know there are some recent articles where some VPNs were found to be tracking data that was going through them. So just because VPNs say they're secure and whatnot, it really depends on the reputation of VPN. I'm sure NordVPN is probably one of the more reputable ones, but there are, I'm sure, some VPNs that are less secure and that you want to avoid. Yeah. Okay.
You mentioned something earlier about like not rewarding technology, but what if your kids have done all of those other things, like, you know, play outside, you know, sports, whatever,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is it more of the language to where you say, where you don't say, if you do those things, then you can get, you know, this? Is it, it seems like that's what it is.
Yeah.
Also, someone talked about browsers. I use Brave browser, and it kind of shows me, like, what's being tracked, and, or not what, but what they blocked.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on Brave?
Yeah, I use Brave myself as well, and it's a great option. It definitely shows what's being tracked, and that can sometimes come at a cost because your computer's using more power to see what's being tracked and whatnot. But yeah, it's a great option. There's lots of great browsers. Even I think DuckDuckGo as well shows what's tracking you, and you can also block what's being tracked. But yeah, I would definitely say that in terms of like technology as a reward, that the wording of how you say things and the intent is like so important. Because kids are really good at reading that. And yeah, just be aware of using those words like, here's your reward, you know, iPad, you know. But instead just like not putting it up on a pedestal. But yeah, having it, you can definitely still use it as an option. You know, it gets a lot harder. Like maybe you're on a plane, all right, and then you can't go play outside. That'd be bad. So in those cases, it's, you know, it's acceptable to have, you know, technology to keep them busy. But yeah, beware to make it, you know, a big driver of motivation for your kid. You know, we want them to be motivated by honoring the Lord, honoring their parents, you know, first and foremost. We don't want them to be motivated because they get something out of it. You know, that can be very dangerous, and that can really mess with their with them subconsciously, that they always need to get a reward for doing something. So their greatest reward should be honoring the Lord and just making sure you instill that, and that's the primary priority. That's their motivation. I'd say that's most important for sure. But, yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, your wording is super important when it comes to technology and kids because they listen very well. Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Or else we'll... All right. Again, if you guys see any of the IT team around, feel free to poke them, let them know, you know, you need some help because, you know, we need more Christians in tech and we need more people that are familiar with tech because that's the only way we can use it for good and for the Lord's glory. All right. We're going to close in prayer, so let's bow our heads and give thanks to the Lord. Dear Lord, it is incredible to see all these amazing people in this room, whether it's for themselves, for their families, for their loved ones, just the motivation to want to learn more and just to do better to honor you, Lord. It's incredible. All these different people from all kinds of different walks of lives and situations and things that you've saved them out of. It's incredible just how you've brought us all here right now for in your wisdom, in your will, and for your purpose, Lord. Dear Lord, I thank you so much for all the things you give us because you give us everything we need. And you also know we don't need because you take away things for our good. Dear Lord, thank you so much. I pray that we would have wisdom to rely on you, to prioritize you, and that by prioritizing you, we would lower ourselves. Dear Lord, thank you so much for all you give us. We truly don't deserve all the amazing gifts you give us. We pray that we would use the gifts you give us for your honor, that we wouldn't spend our days wasted, but instead we would spend them glorifying you as our lives are so short. And these are all gifts from you, and we need to be grateful for the gifts, but also be more grateful for the giver of the gifts and be thankful to the giver of the gifts. Dear Lord, thank you again. We will never be able to earn ourselves or exclaim how thankful we are truly because you've done that for us through your Son, Lord, and we're grateful for that. It's something we don't deserve and it's something we could never earn. But Lord, you came for us. You sacrificed your Son for us, and it's more than we could ever imagine or ever earn. Dear Lord, thank you again. I pray for wisdom for all these people, including myself, that you would continue to guide us, keep us in your fold, and just keep us honoring you, Lord, because that is our primary motivation, to honor you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Thank you all so much. It was fun.